Thank you, Dr. Bernhardt. I am one of his aspiring students, so I would not be here today if it wasn't for him and his and the information opportunity to speak with you today. So, and he is actually the true 2.0 guru. So today we're going to talk about Healthy Aging 2.0, the potential of new media and technology. So as you note in your in the program, the name has changed. It's now the potential instead of the power. This has been accepted for publication. So again, Amanda Hall, University of Florida. I have nothing to disclose. So a quick overview. So we're going to talk today, define this term Healthy Aging 2.0, going with health from the idea of it as optimal health and wellness and aging, not from cradle to the grave, but more for older adults we're going to be focusing on today. Next, we'll look at some trends, what's currently going on with older adults and their use of the internet and technology. And finally, we'll end with some mHealth. These are mobile devices, applications for health by consumers and healthcare providers. The main take-home message today is to the potential of this new media and technology to empower, educate older adults to become active participants in their healthcare while educating them to make healthy decisions. So can anybody tell me what the oldest segment of the U.S. population is right now, the fastest growing segment of the population is? It's 80-year-olds. And we actually, on Monday, if anybody paid attention to the news, what milestone did we reach? That's right, 7 billion people on this planet. Amazing. So we're living longer. The average age for males is about mid-70s. For females, early 80s. Put this in perspective, that means one in eight Americans are 65 and older. That represents 12.8% of the population. This is expected to grow to 20% by 2030. And again, to put this in perspective, that means one in every five Americans will be 65 or older. So of those who are 65 and older, 84% have one or more chronic conditions. Now, you've heard a lot of talk about these baby boomers. This cohort, post-World War II, babies that were born, about 76 million. They will be reaching age 65 this year and will be eligible for to receive Medicare benefits. So, and of those, that means 84% will have one or more chronic diseases. Again, it's expected that of this cohort, by 2030, 37 million will be living with one or more chronic conditions. Currently in the U.S. population, about 125 million Americans have a chronic condition, so it just shows you the issue that we'll be facing in the future. So I ask myself, is technology making our lives easier? And more importantly, how is technology making us healthier? So this picture always makes me stand up a little straighter because posture is very important. So I'd like to take a poll, just a show of hands. How many people have a landline, call, make doctor's appointments? So a few of you, okay, great. I don't, but I'm glad many of you do. So you've heard a lot of talk about this 2.0, 1.0. So this idea of healthy aging, that would be healthy aging 0.0. So you have a landline and you have some form of communication with healthcare providers. How many people look online for health information or buy health products? Okay, great. That would be, it would be healthy aging 1.0. So that one-way communication flow of information with the use of technology. Now, how many people have a smartphone, use a health app, blog, email, text with healthcare providers? Okay, a number of you. Excellent. Then you guys would be considered healthy aging 2.0. So let's define this further. So Web 2.0, which is a web application that facilitates interactive information sharing. Users can interact or collaborate with each other in social media dialogue as creators of user-generated content in a virtual community. Hopefully many people have, if most of this group uses the internet, and is very 2.0 savvy. You have such things as Flickr, Facebook, Wikipedia, Blogger, Twitter. So now we move on to this idea of health 2.0. So the use of a specific set of Web 2.0 tools by actors in healthcare, including doctors, patients, and scientists, using principles of open source and generation of content by users and the power of networks in order to personalize healthcare, collaborate, and promote health education. Now, there's a couple examples here. Sermo.com, is anybody familiar with this site? It's more or less for physicians to interact, talk about, collaborate about devices, drugs, clinical issues, so they can solve some of these tough problems they're facing with their patients. CaringBridge.org is a fantastic site for patients or people who are facing a health challenge to access, become involved in a community of family and friends for support and emotional support. And then we have Health Vault. It's a Microsoft online website where you can store secure health information online. So I want to bring an example as we come to define this term of healthy aging 2.0, this idea of telemedicine, the use of technology where distance is a factor by healthcare providers for the purpose of diagnosis, treatments, and prevention purposes. So I'd like to use a case example. Mrs. Hart, made up name, right here. She was just recently went into the hospital. She had a complaint of chest pain, shortness of breath. She was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. She stayed about an average of 4 days where she had around-the-clock care with doctors, nurses, dietitians. Upon discharge, Mrs. Hart goes home. She cannot remember. She's isolated. She can't remember her discharge instructions. She doesn't know what medications to take, and she's confused. A couple days later, she returns to the hospital. Now, what is a solution? A solution is a telemonitoring device. This device can be installed in her house. As you see, there's a telestation. This telestation is hooked to a phone line. Because I find that, from my past experience working in home care, most older adults, 65 and older, do have a landline. So this is hooked to a landline and offers a direct two-way communication between healthcare providers and Mrs. Hart in her home. There's remote devices, such as the talking scale. There's a blood pressure. And there's a couple other devices you can get with this particular telemonitoring company. So this device, you can actually put surveys on it. You can troubleshoot. Good morning, Mrs. Hart. How are you doing in the morning? We advise patients to weigh themselves, take their vitals every morning at the same time. This information is then wirelessly sent to a remote website where a nurse can monitor it 24/7. If there's any vitals that are out of range, then it's flagged. A survey is sent to kind of troubleshoot because she's in her home. Then it's prompt. A nurse will call immediately, Mrs. Hart. Mrs. Hart, how are you doing? We noticed that your vitals were out of range. Did you remember to take your medication? And then at that point, it offers support. So this now empowers and engages Mrs. Hart in her healthcare, while at the same time educating her on her disease process. So a perfect example, I was in a home with a patient, and I was installing and teaching the patient how to actually go through, weigh themselves, and use this device. I stood on the scale. I then had the patient stand on the scale. Within a minute or two, a nurse called and said, hey, we noticed, you know, your weight was out of, you know, way off because the patient was a lot lighter than me. So that just shows it's immediate feedback, immediate call the patient and try to find a solution. So this brings us to defining healthy aging 2.0, the effective use of participatory and collective technologies and applications to develop and maintain optimal mental, social, and physical well-being and function in older adults and their social network. So what's currently going on? We've now defined this term of healthy aging 2.0. How are older adults using the internet, and what are they using it for? So I don't know, perhaps most of you have heard of the e-patient. This is a term used to describe people who look online for health information to help them deal with a medical condition. So approximately, Pew Internet data, approximately 75% of internet users look online for health information. Approximately 60% of these e-patients who looked online, it actually prompted them when they went to go see their primary care physician or another specialist to ask additional questions about their health. And then again, about approximately 60% then would seek a second opinion. So 75% of these e-patients with a chronic condition say their last health care search affected a treatment decision. Again, this e-patient, they're now empowered, engaged, and educated to become an active participant in their healthcare. So to go on some current trends, there's been a change over the last 10 years in internet use by older adults. As you see, about 13%, this has grown to about 42%. This is Pew Internet data. This is actually consistent with U.S. Census data as well. They found that 42% actually use the internet in this age group. And then about 53%, and this is, of course, according to the U.S. Census data, actually have access to the internet. So let's look at what they're doing with social media. Again, older adults are engaged in social media. You can see it's about 5% to 26%. They're not as heavy users as other age groups, but as you know, these baby boomers are retiring and will move into this age group. So this just brings a couple points from the previous slide on social media. So about half, 47%, of internet users 50 to 64 are using social media, and then about a quarter, 26% of users 65 and older use social media. So again, smaller percent are actually their reading, sharing, personal updates. So what does this mean? This is the potential. Again, we're looking at the potential of social media and technology. So this offers an outlet for older adults to use social networking, to access information, engage in a community for social support. So why aren't more older adults online or using the internet? This was a fantastic study done from CREATE, the Center for Research and Education on Aging and Technology Enhancement. And they were looking at variables that predict use of technology and breadth of computer use. So they're looking at any device for a domain of technology use, and then older adults' use with computers in general in the World Wide Web. And an interesting finding, they looked at attitudes, different characteristics, they looked at fluid intelligence, crystallized intelligence, and they found that computer low self-efficacy and anxiety were predictors of computer use. So given these barriers to older adults getting online, what are some solutions? So this article offered up training classes such as stress inoculation training, which would deal with the anxiety, and they also offered some educational programs that were really self-paced designed. So older adults could go kind of pace themselves, learn it to not get frustrated when they're using and learning to use computers. Other ways that older adults actually taught themselves, trial and error. They looked directions on the web. They actually looked for classes. A lot of retirement homes are offering classes for older adults to teach them how to email, how to get online and access resources. And then, of course, others actually, you know, taught themselves. And I thought it was interesting, the discussion of this paper, other factors that were not used variables in this study were actually the usefulness. In other previous studies, they looked at another variable is usefulness of this technology, the effort, you know, how much effort was it to actually learn and was it useful for them in their everyday lives, and then the cost. If you think about it, many of these older adults are retired. They're not going to necessarily invest in these technologies if they don't really need it in their everyday life. So these are just some of the barriers, but hopefully this baby boomer cohort will definitely change this. So that brings us right into baby boomers. There's been a lot of talk about this group, 76 million of them. So I just wanted to bring up some data that had recently changed over 10 years. I mean, this is phenomenal. 40% in 2000 used the internet. Now 74% of this cohort use the internet. Less than 5% had broadband at home. Now this broadband is high, you know, internet, high access or high speed internet. Now 10 years later, 63%. 34% own a phone. 2000, this is up to 81. 0% connected to the internet wirelessly. Now that is 47%. And this idea of cloud computing, many of you have heard this. There was a session here at American Public Health Conference and RAPHA, And it showed that this is just the idea of this remote server to save information. An example would be Google Docs. So again, this has changed from less than 10% to 50%. So this moves us on. We've now looked at some trends in older adults. Now we move on to this idea of mHealth, using mobile devices for health among consumers and healthcare professionals. So as you can see, the 65 plus, they're lagging behind other age groups. 57% own a cell phone. Only 20% have the internet, access to internet wirelessly from their phone. Now I put this example of Jitterbug. Has anybody, a show of hands, anybody used Jitter or seen Jitterbug? Okay, wonderful. Well, Martin Cooper, he was the inventor of the cell phone. He actually came up with the Jitterbug. It's a phone. Many of the variables or barriers that I spoke about in the previous slide, the cost, usefulness, effort, this phone is very simple. Big keys, big numbers, it lights up. It's very easy to use, very cheap plans. It's a dial tone, and you can actually dial zero and get an operator. So it's going back to that old landline type of phone, but it's now a mobile device. So as far as teaching, usability, you know, older adults really adapt well to using this device. So this is another solution. So I want to bring up some examples of this mHealthier mobile applications for aging. There's an app, PainCare. It's an app where an individual who is throughout the day suffering from different levels of pain, they actually can put, there's a smiley face or frown face, and throughout the day they can put in how they're feeling, and then this information is then collected, and of course their location then triggers that are causing them to have various different levels of pain. This information is sent to a physician, and the physician can then now adjust this patient's medications through this mobile app, real-time feedback. iMeds is another app. It's for healthcare providers. It offers over 7,300 medications for them to access on their mobile devices to give information for patients and to look up information for themselves. And then I put this other example, Sensei Diabetes. This is a self-management program for diabetics. In pre-diabetics, they offer various programs. I just put this, their diabetic, as an example on this slide. So again, this offers virtual coaching, feedback. So throughout the day, the individual is able to access this information, help with weight management, diet. They could put in their blood glucose level. And so again, it's that reminders, that coaching, that two-way direct information in real time throughout the day. So just a conclusion. Again, I know I'm reading these definitions, but I really want to drive home what I'm trying to bring across. So again, it's Healthy Aging 2.0, the effective use of participatory and collective technologies and applications to develop and maintain optimal mental, social, and physical well-being and function in older adults and their social networks. So again, this idea that applications to empower, engage, and educate older adults for optimal health and well-being. Again, I'd like to end with this quote. If I had my way, I would make health catching instead of disease. I really think the potential of new media and technology can make health catching. So I really think this is a solution to a lot of the costs and the chronic diseases that older adults are facing. They can use these applications. So thank you. Just acknowledgments, Dr. Bernhardt, definitely inspirational, and I would, again, not be here if it wasn't for him. Dr. Stelson, the Center for Digital Health and Wellness, Department of Health Education and Behavior, University of Florida, thank you. Here's my contact information if you'd like to email me or have any questions. And of course, I know that Dr. Bernhardt mentioned the conference coming up, but again, just to end on this, if you liked anything that you heard here, I just touched on some of the topics that will then be looked at in more depth at the Digital Health Communication Extravaganza. You don't want to miss it. It will be a fantastic event. So thank you very much. I'll entertain any questions. I don't know if I have a minute or so. Okay. Thank you.
How much did, have you looked at the economics of this? I mean, you're looking at the age, mm-hmm. and you're looking at the chronic conditions that they have, but have you looked at how much the use of this kind of product is being driven by economics or lack of reimbursement by health plans and insurers for those kinds of services?
Well, that's an excellent question. You know, it is a challenge. It's always hard to, obviously with prevention, to put it into monetary terms. I know with telemonitoring, I'm more familiar with those. I know that they are cost-saving, and if you can prevent a rehospitalization in a patient, it definitely saves money. I don't have exact. I know the VA has done a number of work on that. I think that's yet to be looked at.
But do any of these studies look at whether or not more people who are 65 plus would be using them if there was a way to get them without having them pay out of pocket?
Well,
because you're showing a lot of, you know, disparity between what younger people are doing and older people.
Yeah, there's definitely a lag in the older adults. Well, I mean, I can look at apps. A lot of apps are cheap, 99 cents. Many are free that they can either access. But, of course, these companies as well have to keep up and running to promote their product, need to find some sort of balance. So I'd have to look into that. So thank you. That's an excellent question.
Maybe one more question, and then we'll go on to the next speaker.
So it saves health insurance money by preventing rehospitalization, et cetera. Are they reimbursing for the time that's by the practitioners, et cetera?
You know, you can answer that. But yeah, that is, hopefully in the future they will start reimbursing more and more. You know, you can speak to that. So thank you. Very good, great question.
Thank you. Okay, one more hand for